On our CWC website, our 7 UU principles are listed with an introduction as follows. We, the member congregations of the Canadian Unitarian Council, covenant to affirm and promote. Our church theme for the month of September is promise, and the words covenant and promise are synonyms. Not only does our congregation covenant to affirm these principles, but also covenants to promote them. So today, we're talking a little bit about how some of us live these principles in our everyday lives. I want to thank my fellow presenters for stepping up to share their thoughts and experiences. It's not easy to talk about yourself, even for you. But to invite Scott first.
Thank you, Deborah. I will speak about three principles that I think have certainly informed my 80-year journey so far. The inherent worth and dignity of each person, the justice, equality, and compassion in human relations, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. To do that, I need to give a little background. Born in 1937, I was a child of the latter years of the Great Depression, World War II, the American Civil Rights Movement, the subsequent wars, both cold and hot, and I've been deeply affected by the violence, inequity, injustice, lack of compassion, and just outright hatred that one encounters all too often. Growing up with my family in Oregon, we talked often about weighty matters, particularly at the dinner table, and wondered about what we could do to make things better in the world. What I most remember as a conclusion to these many discussions was the admonition to live an active and principled life along the lines of those principles I just articulated. My parents' story was a powerful influence on me. My dad, who overcame poverty and abuse to become a respected academic in the American university system, gave me an appreciation of the underdog. While my mother, from a Norwegian-American family in Eureka, California, provided me a perspective about the immigrant experience, what it means to be the other. Both were very compassionate activists in the community. As a youth, I was involved in local social and civil rights issues in my high school, which, by the way, was on the University of Oregon campus, University High School. The Congregational Church Youth Group, and the Community YMCA. At the U of O, University of Oregon, I was active on the campus, YMCA, and International Student Club. In fact, for all the years I was there, I was the vice president of it. Always somebody from abroad was the president. We were an international student friendship family. Each year we always had somebody from somewhere else who spent a lot of time with us and we got to know. I chaired International Affairs Week, scared stiff. And when I was a graduate student, it was a big deal, whole week. And I was involved in a lot of student affairs and was a political activist of a sort on the campus at a time when the civil rights movement was so gearing up. Before coming to Canada in 1964, I lived in Norway for 6 years. I studied at the University of Oslo and then worked at an international development institute, Bergen, and a regional and urban study center in Oslo. I learned to speak Norwegian fluently and to understand Swedish, Danish, and German, giving me a feeling of being an insider in another culture. When I came to Dalhousie University in 1964, it was to assume a position in teaching and public affairs research and community outreach. I worked collaboratively with diverse communities in Nova Scotia, the Black, Indigenous and communities, and every community in the area. Working on regional planning studies, very much animating community processes, adult education programs, international development studies, doing work abroad, and finally in environmental studies. Again, always with a community outreach focus. Involved in many community organizations in Halifax at times I wondered how, I thought at the time, looking back at how many things I was involved in. I was a founding member of the Nova Scotia Gambia Association, which has been running for 26 or 7 years now, providing some very vital services in the West Africa in cooperation with the communities there. I'm an active supporter of Amnesty International, QSO, Ecology Action Center, Oxfam, and a lot of other NGOs. I've been a lifelong amateur radio operator. And as such, I have a global community of radio friends totally around the world. For nearly 10 years, I was on the board of directors, and I was a chair of Radio for Peace International on the UN University for Peace campus in Costa Rica. It was like community radio on steroids, talking about peace and justice, all kinds of programs that were, reaching people in 100 countries. Since retiring in 2001, I've learned to speak Spanish, to add to the languages that I know, and I'm enjoying an immersion into the cultures and the perspectives of Latin America, most significantly Costa Rica, Mexico, and Uruguay, and there's much more I would like to say, but I won't.
Good morning. Deborah asked me to say a few words on how to live one or two Unitarian Universalist principles. Oh yes, it seemed easy at the time. Anyway, I reread them, and also 10 good reasons for joining the UU congregation. Number 1 and number 10 appeal to me, as all of them did. Having recently become a member, thanks to my friend Marie, because here we join with open hearts and minds and work to worship together, seeking what is sacred among us. Number 10, because here we build a supportive community that eases loneliness and opens our hearts. I feel less lonely now that I belong to this caring community. My heart feels gratitude. So much giving, so much going on here. For instance, time to talk, the monthly sessions of thought-provoking and timely for me. It's about aging and all that entails. Interesting subjects. Nothing is taboo, and the music is beautiful. I would love my family to be part of this congregation. That may or may not happen, but the power of positive thought and love, maybe it will happen. I wish peace and love to all of us this Labor Day weekend. Thank you.
David Lewis, and I will become a member of this group next week because I answered the call from Norm Horofker to try to increase the membership to 100 by that date. I hope that we are successful in that regard. When thinking of that, I thought also of the life that I lead, which is a very fortunate one. I get to travel to many countries, ones which I choose to be in. I spend some time in the United States, and when I'm in Exeter, New Hampshire, I attend the First Unitarian Universalist Society of Exeter, where they have a minister who's excellent, perhaps the equivalent of Norm, Reverend Kendra Ford. That's a small community, Exeter, and even if you went almost to Boston, you wouldn't have the population that we have in Halifax Metro, I don't think. And they have been quite successful by just being a first-class Universalist Unitarian community. I also have time to read, and these days I'm reading things connected to explorations, because last year I was in, Karen and I were spent the winter in Portugal, where exploration was a very big part of the creation of that society. But I'm recently read two books which allow me to, I think clearly about how I will behave in order to follow the first and seventh principles. The first of those books is The Way, written by Michael Pruitt and Christine Gross Lowe, which addresses the question, what Chinese philosophers can teach us about the good life? Pruitt is a scholar in Chinese studies at Harvard, and he offered a first-year class in Chinese studies, which now is the third most popular class at Harvard. And one lesson, and then he collaborated with Christine Gross Lowe to create this book, which is based on that Harvard class. And one lesson from it is to, when meeting another person, pay great attention to how you are being perceived by that other person. And that's because the perception, I think of the average, anybody living, we're bombarded by these perceptions of people that we interact with in one way or another. So that leads me to another book that I've been reading, which written by David Hackett Fisher, called Champlain's Dream. Now, Champlain came to Nova Scotia in early 1600, not to Halifax, but to what he called Le Havre, which is now Le Havre. He then explored parts of Nova Scotia and some other regions and wrote a book about his encounter with the natives. He called them sauvage, which meant not savage, but forest living peoples. Amongst those were the Mi'kmaq, and he was impressed by their intelligence, their community, and their way of living. That shows up in his book, which I can only approach in translation, which is still in print. Which leads me to make this comment about how to live our principles. Think of not a living person, but a dead person whose presence you meet when you are a Mi'kmaq. That person is a statue just down the street from us. Our group here is addressing what the response to that should be. I say, based on the teachings of Chinese philosophers, take it down. Because every time a native person sees that, they're reminded that that person, Cornwallis, did not have respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. No way. There were other persons, and did not have respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part. Take it down. Thank you. Whoops.
While writing this, I realized that I have high aspirations, like most, and have managed a few little bits here and there. And in the short time I have, I will just tell you a tiny bit. I've chosen to speak on the seventh principle, which is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Many folks interpret this one as the taking care of Mother Earth principle. But for me, it's much more than that. For me, it's not just about being green, at which I work fairly hard. I usually support the green projects that the Social Responsibility Committee endorses, and I work being green as widely as possible in my own life. A few examples, conscious of how much water I use, I wash clothes in cold water, of course I follow the three R's, which I've been doing for over 30 years, and I also add other R's like repurpose, and even reject, as in not buy the latest new thing, if the old one will do. I endeavor to drive my car as little as possible by doing all my errands in one area. My car is very fuel efficient, which was my goal when I bought it 12 years ago, and I learned certain driving techniques that save a lot of extra fuel. You can Google that and find some really interesting things that I've never seen before. For instance, I'll put it in neutral and I'm gliding down the big hills of HRM and losing my place. And of course, then I shut off my engine when I'm at certain traffic lights that I know take a long time. Or if I'm sitting at this season's mini construction sites. I buy 100% recycled print paper for my printer, use one-sided pages or double print, or avoid printing altogether. I buy pesticide-free organic and or local produce whenever I can, not only for my family's health, but for the health of the land and the farm workers who produce the food. This is one of, the things that I fund extra, because I think it's a social action issue for me. There are so many things that I do to care for Mother Earth, but as I said earlier, I believe there's much more to the seventh principle than respect for the interdependent web of existence. For me, that means not just the Earth, but all living things. I believe that all Earth is connected in that interdependent web, that all life is connected. For me, it's not just about sustainable living, but also about peaceful living, showing we care, being there for each other, about promoting healthy ways of living, not only through food or lifestyle choices, but other actions, such as attitude and gratitude. The great thing about attitude and gratitude is they don't cost me anything. They are free to give and free to receive. So to me, all these things and so many more show respect for the interdependent web. If I can enhance my life and all that exists around me by all I do and say, then I believe I'm living the seventh principle the best way I can. Thank you.
I'll be speaking for the next half hour. I'm going to be speaking on the third Unitarian Universalist principle. The third principle contains two parts. One, acceptance of each other, and encouragement. Number two, encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. So I live the first part of this principle by remembering our history. In 1558, our faith tradition emerged when Unitarian King John Sigismund proclaimed the Western world's first edict of religious toleration. The edict declared that everyone could freely profess and practice their religion of choice, and reciprocally must refrain from harming others who are practicing theirs. What profound courage it must have taken to issue that proclamation amidst the brutality of the theological wars that ravaged Eastern Europe during the Reformation period. To me, acceptance is a step above toleration. We can grudgingly tolerate others, but acceptance compels us to respect each other without necessarily adopting what each believe or sanctioning how we act. I try as best I can to speak and act in ways that promote an accepting church environment. This has occurred through trying to be a welcoming presence for newcomers as a greeter, seeking respectful dialogue and compromise in governance positions, participating in our initial covenanting task force, which helped to set limits and boundaries so members could feel safe, and internalizing the urging of our UU forebearer, Francis David, not to think alike, but to love alike. The second part of the UU principle calls us to encourage spiritual growth. I believe this requires that we each become well acquainted with our own spiritual tendencies. I like the lyrics from the song Gathering of Spirits by Carrie Newcomer. It professes, "The wisest say that there's a thousand ways to kneel and kiss the ground." And being a mystical sort of person involved in music, I value the image in a poem by David Blanchard of a people in Eastern Africa who believe that we are each created with our own song. It is good to get to know our song or songs so they are reliable guides and sources of comfort and spiritual encouragement when we go through times of struggle or when life distracts us from our best selves. UUs are blessed to have theologically and spiritually diverse congregations. For some, though, this is sometimes frustrating. Church can often appear to just scrape the surface of spiritual experience and not have the capacity to offer the depth of exploration that our spiritual journey or our song that we may need at points in our life. Some of us seek spiritual practices or disciplines both within and without our congregation. However, it should not be overlooked that the further blessing our UU faith offers is the encouragement for each of us to be searchers and the open door allowing us to return and share what we have learned. I have multiple practices that I consider spiritual, which I adopt with varying degrees of seriousness and regularity. Most of them have a mental and physical balance. I love the almost meditative rhythmic pattern of swimming and cycling, and the intervals of physical exertion where there's tension and release. The feeling of letting go when the exercise time is over and breathing returns back to normal is a wonderful time of gratitude and contentment. But with the coming and going of various phases of activities or spiritual practices, there's been the constant of music, and this is where I feel I've perhaps been most in line with the third principle. I truly enjoy searching for music that matches service themes and which has a spiritual message, and I probably spend 2 to 3 hours weekly in this spiritual practice. I try and gauge what I know about the song preferences of service leaders or the after choir members to help me select compatible songs. And when a selection is made, I print off multiple song sheets in different keys to try and accommodate members' vocal ranges. We endeavor to have an open process of song selection. Members can bring their own song choices, and I try not to be too wedded to my own ideas. Like others who look outside the church for some of their spiritual sustenance, I have joined a community band in Halifax to explore the challenges of jazz music. This has been a great joy and source of camaraderie. It also has allowed me to bring back musical ideas to add to the church's music ministry. Jazz has been a spiritual awakening for me. I view it as a form of connection to my heart and mind, and perhaps my primal song. It allows me taking a seemingly complex personal experience and sharing it. In the words of alto saxophone great Charlie Parker, music is your own experience, your own thoughts, your wisdom. If you don't live it, it won't come out your horn. They teach you there is a boundary line to music, but man, there's no boundary line to art. To me, spirituality is not a linear, vertical relationship God with God or heaven, but an expansion, but an openness, an expansion of ourselves in all directions. My hope is this may help us connect with and encourage the diverse range of spirituality in our congregation.